This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Hey everyone, it's Estet Herndon, political reporter for the New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent, I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what the New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your irresponsible three-year-old of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Garamonica.
We not worry about no other mother. We the mother. You bust down a rollie, I bust down a brick. Then I flooded. I am not to be compared to you rappers. Easy does it. I am more easy, you trying your best to becoming. Coming. She like them bottles with bubbles in it. Buy her Loewe another linen. Why would I wait when there's other women? Why would I hate we in love with winning? Ooh! Buy her bundles, fly her out. Bring a friend, I try her out. Ain't no worries finding out the details as I in doubt. Easily they plays along, hoping that I play a song. Love the trap music. Dope money just came along.
Does everybody have a jacket? Because easy season is coming to a close and the winds are turning towards Toronto.
Scorpio time.
Yeah. Older than I expected. Easy season. a little clammy out.
You ready for some finished tracks? All you have to wait for is Friday.
I want to say that this podcast will be finished. Yes. This will be finished. So there's a lot to process. And since I last spoke to everybody, I put out an article. I spent some time with Kanye West. And I
long
put
read.
A definitely hashtag long read. Or if you're on Twitter, hashtag no read for all my fans on Twitter. And yeah, I spent a lot of time with Kanye. And I spent the 2 days following the Wyoming listening session with him, wrote a very long piece, wrote actually a much longer piece that became the shorter long piece. Joe is sitting to my right. Joe has read the long version.
We read a couple versions.
We put out a call for listener questions because I think the article and, of course, the last couple of Ye-related projects, there's a lot of unanswered questions. So we put out a call. We got a gang of them. We got the squad together. Joe Coscarelli's here.
Yes.
Reggie Ogwu's here.
Hello.
Justin Charity of The Ringer's here.
What are we doing?
Oh, my God.
What are we doing, though?
Yo,
what are we doing?
I'd like to thank the few dozen people who sent emailed questions.
Very thoughtful.
Very, like, I never cease to be impressed by how passionate and thoughtful the people who listen to this podcast are.
Yeah.
I'm really, really excited, and we're going to answer as many of them as possible, even if mostly they're just, why didn't you try to talk Kanye West out of, like, Donald Trump?
that is the
John,
most...
John, why didn't you talk him out of Donald Trump?
Oh, damn it!
Let's just go in there, and then we'll pull back.
Okay.
You did this to yourself.
I follow the lesson of great American political thinker Clifford Harris. I think we all saw what happened when T.I. tried to have a political conversation with Kanye. There are limits to that particular approach. Kanye, as he expressed in my piece, is not a person who approaches politics through the lens of politics. He approaches politics through the lens of vibes. And you can't talk someone off a vibe. Or it's hard. You don't kill, you know, no vibe killing. So that is something that, even though I went down that road, and there's actually quite a long section that didn't even make it into the first draft, that's just a back and forth with he and I about politics, that I could not put in because, as a New York Times employee, I do not have political opinions. So
is that really why you left it out? Because it had your own political views in there?
Yeah. So that exists.
Wait, so I got to profile John to get we got to do a whole profile inception to get to the heart of this?
And then he's going to lose his job at the end of it.
He's exactly right. I'm not actually, with your form of identification, I'm not even sure you'd be allowed.
Yeah, where's your? Do you have your press card on you, or just this ratty passport that Justin Charity used to enter the New York Times office today?
Listen, y'all don't want to hear all of the conversations that happen.
As fashion is moving towards a DIY aesthetic, Justin Charity expands the notion with a passport that looks like it's been stitched together from five composite passports.
Vintage.
More with Elsa Clench after the break.
But this was going back to politics. This was a question that we got a lot, and one version of it was from Jonathan Saponara, who said, you know, that Kanye states in his interview, as he stated on Twitter, that he doesn't agree with all of Trump's policies. If that's the case, what policies do you think he likes, if he could even name one? Clearly, he appreciates Trump's personality, but doesn't some of your support of a political figure have to come from policy?
I know Justin's going to try to wash me on this, but, like, that's fine. I'll just go in. I think what you've seen in American politics over the last 2 or 3 years has been a shift, and maybe not even over the last 2 or 3 years, but I think cult of personality politics is obviously central to the current political moment. And it does not surprise me that a person like Kanye, who does not engage with CNN or the New York Times or the Washington Post, Politico, on a daily basis, is having a kind of immediate gut level response to a political figure. I think a lot of people that we see in America today are having immediate gut level responses to political figures, frankly, on both sides. That's a real thing.
No one's trying to wash you for that.
I mean, yeah, not yet.
Kanye definitely is an archetypically American, like, his engagement with politics is culture.
It doesn't shock me in the same way that, like, if I interviewed a random person on the train today coming in, or if I interviewed a random person in Billings, Montana, where I spent time a couple weeks ago, not every voter is informed.
But usually,
also, I'm not sure Kanye votes.
But you know, well, he said he did not vote for Trump. He said if I would have voted, voted on Trump. Important now, position.
I just think that the problem again, it's like, that's why my beef is not any beef with Kanye is just, like, misguided to me. The beef is with anybody who took Kanye seriously on that level this point.
Yes, I mean
that is the actual problem with American culture.
And that is an honest struggle that I found. Like, if you look at my Twitter mentions for the last 24 hours, the amount of people who take his commitment, quote unquote, to Trump as a serious political position, how do you argue against that when you can, first of all, you can just infer that it's not a serious political position, but also after having spent 2 days talking to him, I can report it's not a serious political
right
position.
So when you,
how do you address that, when, how do you push back against that, because that's tiring.
But when you mention, you know, asking a random person on the train, why do you like Trump, why do you not like Trump, usually people are at least feign towards something, right? The economy, the border, something like that. Did you get the sense that Kanye has any policy that he cares about, or is it purely aesthetic?
It's dragon energy. I don't even know how to say
it. So it's all a kinship in mode of being.
And to be fair, like, this is something that I know I've addressed in previous writing. Justin, I think you've addressed in previous writing. Like, when the Twitter storm happened and then the TMZ Charlamagne, like, that moment, and I was writing about it, one of the things I put in that piece is he genuinely sees himself in Trump. And I think the first political quote in my piece is him talking about the hat, and he's like, it's about the it'll never happen, people. It's about the people who told you in high school, like, you can't do this. And he looks at Trump as someone who triumphed over, I don't want to say adversity, because I don't think that's exactly right, but triumphed over unlikely
people telling
odds.
Him no.
Yeah, basically being like, this guy will never be present. And now it's like, LOL.
Not being taken seriously.
Right. So I think Kanye, as a person who kind of always has this back and forth between, like, am I being given the credit I deserve? Am I being taken seriously as a musician, producer, rapper, fashion figure, public celebrity, tech mogul, whatever. This is someone who kind of carries that. I don't know if it's quite anxiety, but he carries that energy with him to look at what happened with Donald Trump. I think for him is like a very logical, like, it me.
I also think it's telling that if you catch any of Trump's rallies for the past 6 months to a year when he's been president, even this last week, he continually, the thing he talks about, he knows it riles up his base, but is like, I beat Hillary Clinton. Like, he's still talking about people saying that he couldn't do it and how amazing it was. And this sort of like the same idea, you could imagine Kanye became the CEO of Apple one day. All he would do as CEO was talk about how people told him he couldn't be the CEO.
He would actually still be ranting about how like Jay-Z didn't want to let him rap on Rockefeller Records in 2002. Like, that's what he would be. So they, he would still be doing
so
that.
So like it's so obvious the kinship between them if you just pay attention to the surface of their concerns.
And of course, like, obviously, like, the politics of Donald Trump having those entitlement issues and the politics of Kanye having are very different. They emanate from different places. But Kanye is an aesthetics-driven guy. Like, Kanye is a person who, like, I think he looks at Trump's speech and recognizes rhythms of speech, rhythms of thought. The thing that I put in the
run-on sentences.
Yeah. The thing that I put in the piece about how Kanye speaks and the kind of like constant shifting between like, I mean this, I don't mean this, I'm testing this out, I'm not testing this out, I'm speaking fast, I'm speaking slow. You watch a Trump rally, that's the same thing.
Yeah. I think the offense then, a lot of it is tied up in the idea that Donald Trump low-key kind of humiliated Kanye fandom. And Kanye fandom is trying to like process that in these very like omnidirectional
ways. And by
ways.
Kanye fandom, do you mean Chance the Rapper?
I just mean that the idea that Kanye himself can look at Trump and be like, that's me, humiliates a lot of people who took Kanye very seriously.
Like Chance the Rapper?
Like, it's not just Chance.
I know.
Just representative of an entire generation.
It includes a lot of people who are now like, are furious about the idea of, like, Kanye has a duty to represent X, Y, and Z. And it's like, he's always represented exactly the thing he saw when he looked at Donald Trump. And people were silly for...
Is that the case, though?
I mean,
Reggie wants to push back. Let Reggie speak.
No, I'm just saying it's him, but is it him? Is that him now? Or is it a shift that's taken place at some point since over the last few albums?
Well, what do you think? Do you think that it's an actual shift?
I agree that it was somewhat gradual. I mean, sure, like, ego has always been a part of Kanye, and gatekeepers, you know, fighting against gatekeepers, those have always been foundational. But I do think that, you know, he didn't consider himself on that. It was different when he was the underdog, right? Versus when he was
Now he's a celebrity. Yeah. Now he's done the artistic perfection thing in his previous records. I think right now what he sees potentially in Trump as well is not just aesthetics, but being able to provoke a reaction, right? Being able to command the conversation. And I think that when he was first starting out, he was trying to do more than that. He had more artistic goals that he was trying to meet that are in sort of the rear view for him now.
Although I actually think he still has artistic goals. I just don't think they're the same artistic goals.
Elaborate.
Okay. So to me, and this is something I think I said on the other, when I called in for the other Kanye podcast.
When you were posted up in Wyoming.
Billings, Montana.
In Montana.
Billings, Montana. Yeah. I had a lot of time. I had like free brain space. Yes. A lot of mountains around me. So, okay. You look at My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, right? Everything that was happening in Kanye's life was orchestrated directly towards one goal. It was to make this grand scale Walt Disney masterpiece of an album, like early, just huge, detailed, like function micro and macro, flying in every little person in the world to contribute like three sentences. Everything in his life is there. But at that time, he's not married. He's not trying to run a fashion business. He's not trying to do all these other things. The Kanye of 2018 is juggling different artistic exploits. He's trying to put out clothes. He's trying to, you know, clothes and sneakers. He's trying to make records. In a way, like, I looked at the five Wyoming albums as basically like me forcing myself on deadline to shut out all the other stuff. And basically, like, I can't think about this long-term piece because I have to do this short-term piece. So I think him saying, I'm going to work on all these albums at once is his way of saying, okay, for 5 weeks,
I'm making music.
I'm not going to deal with fashion. And in that framework, no, he's not making the same thing as fantasy.
But that's the challenge. That's what's exciting to him is doing 5 projects like this as opposed to making some, and the content or the level of artistry on the albums is not as interesting to him as the fact that I'm going to have 5 steps.
Maybe the stunt might be, yes, the stunt might be more. Although I think there's, I don't know.
So let's get into some of these questions about the music because we're going to get there.
To my point, here's Ryan Griffin. Is Kanye West, specifically Ye, the album, underrated? I realize that sounds counterintuitive. From a critical standpoint, most critics seem to write off Ye as a toss-off or not as good as X. Most reviews had the same first few paragraphs talking about their problem, quote-unquote, with recent Kanye, then trying to prove their point using the album. Your points on a previous podcast, why thank you, about empathy and difficulty, futility in ranking his albums was very good. When an artist is this vulnerable and open with his or her audience, most reviews are meaningless. That's not right. But
we have a Kanye fan.
Yes, and that's fine.
Which is fine.
But I do fundamentally think that, and I remember, just as a quick aside, I know that like listening parties seem fun to people who don't go to them, but listening parties are terrible.
I don't go to them joints in general.
I know. Justin knows.
I can't.
Everyone sitting around this table knows that listening parties are not a good way to listen to an album.
Like when I first heard Ye, like the morning after the listening or whenever it came out on Spotify, like, I first really listened to it. I was like, oh, that's what the record sounds like. Like I had no concept of what the record sounded like, except for maybe like 2 or 3 key singing and singing moments and like a couple of lines that kind of like popped out. But like when you are around a bonfire with like 400 people, like it's not, I don't care how good the speakers are. Like,
they're too good, honestly.
Yeah,
they're deafening.
That's fair.
Yeah.
When I first finally did hear Ye, I was struck by a lot of the vulnerability in it. It's a little bit looser than I think even I'm comfortable with. And I think people are like extremely uncomfortable with how loose and kind of like slapdash it can feel in places. But yeah, do I think it's underrated? I do think it's underrated. And I do think that part of what you saw in the critical treatment is critics had to go through the moment of addressing everything that had happened with Kanye in the previous 2 months and the disappointment and need to take a stand and virtue signal sometimes of that, I think puts people in a position where it's like, well, we're trashing this.
No. Okay. So
yeah,
you gave the Kanye to the forum line on that.
I don't know. I think that's the weird cosmic brain. I had my KTT tattooed covered up.
And when?
Yeah.
When did you?
What put you
this
over?
This morning.
So it was the Teyana Taylor album that did it?
There is a cosmic brain feedback loop because it just seems like what you're saying is both, it's totally correct, right? Like you go into writing a review of this, I mean, there are a bunch of albums, but specifically Ye.
But yay.
You go into that album and it's like, crap, this is all the context.
Baggage.
All this baggage. And if you work in media, certainly, you know, I think it's skewed.
When you say baggage, do you mean off-white, Rimowa, transparent, rolling suitcases?
No.
Do you mean Louis Vuitton weekend bags?
No.
Listen, okay, I know a lot about I have this passport, you see.
Yeah.
I know.
But clearly no bag to put it in.
I think that's true. I certainly think that like there's a lot of baggage. And sure, that creates certain insurmountable challenges for the album. But it's simultaneously true that most of the music sounds like demos that just are not great. That just aren't.
They're hasty.
Yeah, they're hasty, and they even if
Reggie's like, that's generous.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like hasty. I can totally imagine a different world in which, like, okay, this is Kanye's hasty album. Like, this is a new mode, and he makes it work. And to me, it's not just that the album is hasty. It's hasty in a bad way. It's hasty in just I guess you go back to Yeezus and Kanye talking about like how he finished the album and, you know, at basically Under the Wire. And Yeezus makes that sound like a good idea in the polar opposite way that Ye makes it sound like, oh, this is the worst possible way you could have gone about trying to make an album.
Where's Rick Rubin at when you need him?
Yeah.
So Kanye told me that 8 days before Ye came out, he didn't have any lyrics written. And I believe that, especially because I did get to, and this didn't make it into the piece, but I did get to sit in for maybe an hour while he was sort of figuring some things out for the Kids See Ghosts record. And you could see kind of how it was all going to come together. He did the thing where he's working his way through a melody and kind of like, you know, finding a particular rhyme scheme. And you see where it's, you can see where it's going to go before I got kicked out of the room. Like, you know, you can see where it's going to go. So I believe that the lyrics were not written. And also the kind of emotional immediacy of a lot of the subject matter, I believe, came from an unvetted place. There was a question, and I'm not seeing it on our, I can't find it on the printout, but there's a question about Kanye had said at one point that the old version of Ye was scrapped. And we were all talking about this before we started recording. And I want to say, and I don't know this for a fact, and I did not ask, and I probably didn't ask because I just didn't believe it. I do not believe there's an old version of Ye. I don't think there are seven songs with those titles that have completely different verses.
No, there may have been starting points of pieces. Ideas that yes. were in the mix that yes. then became no longer in the mix when he decided what he wanted
but
to
But I do not
on.
Believe that there is a, like, Ye V1.zip. Right. Or not wait.
Who among us doesn't have an older, unreleased, better version of the yeah. thing that we yeah. ultimately had? You know?
In the yes. drawer.
In the drawer. Just yeah. it couldn't yeah. come out. You know?
Yes. So now, speaking of emotional Kanye records, let us listen to Ghost Town.
I've been trying to make you love me. But everything I try just takes you further from me. Someday we gon' set it off. Someday we gon' get this off. Baby, don't you bet it all on a path of fentanyl. You might think they wrote you off. They gon' have to roll me off. Someday the drama be gone and they'll burst. Sometimes I take all the shine, talk like I drank all the wine. Years ahead but way behind. I'm on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No half truths, just naked minds. Caught between space and time. This now is blood and mine. But maybe someday. I've been trying.
So this conversation, I think, leads us into another question here. This one from Brian Whitty. And he says, you know, that this era, no doubt, has been the wildest of all. While I clearly prefer an album rollout that didn't involve the MAGA hat and TMZ, I've long accepted that we don't get Kanye as we know him without the extraness. With that said, I'm curious how you think this Yeezy season would have been perceived without the MAGA hat and TMZ. 5 albums in 5 weeks is extraordinary. Thoughts on lyrical content itself is for sure subjective, but I think even the biggest critics would admit there's some amazing production throughout. Can a music-only review of this Kanye era exist? And I think, obviously, what you've seen in these 5 weeks and with these 5 albums is that the answer is no, you can't get music-only review. But I think that in 6 months' time, in a year's time, you know, we will be able to look more clearly at these albums and decide if and how any of them stand up to his previous work. But I think ultimately you're not going to be able to divorce this period of Kanye from the TMZ slavery interview and the Trump stuff because it's all that the albums are about, at least right. his yeah. parts. And I think it's in the text and it's so immediate that I feel like you hear him working through it on each album. Like I think for instance, the verses on Ye that are about the Trump and TMZ mm-hmm. stuff are worse than the verse that's on Kids See Ghosts about it, which mm-hmm. is on Reborn, which to me is like the defining song of this cycle because it best encapsulates the sort of emotional turmoil.
And I think
in a way that's finished.
And I think on Reborn, I don't know if it's quite finished, but I think on Reborn, right. it is, you sense his awareness of reaction.
Yes.
Whereas the lyrics on Ye feel very like, I'm still in my own head. Right. I'm still working through feelings. And Reborn is a bit exterior. No, I mean, we might ultimately learn that Reborn was written 3 weeks before. Yeah, like we
sure,
don't
but
know.
I doubt it. Because you can sort of hear him working through. And even if you think back to the first album, Pusha T's mm-hmm. Daytona, Kanye's verse on that, which he's talking about the MAGA hat.
Yeah.
It's even, you know, that's the beginning. Yes.
Yeah, and it's like casual.
And you see him sort of working through it as these albums come out and even into not the Nas album this year.
Although to quickly answer the question about can there be a music only review of this era, the actual answer to that question is no, music reviews are music only. Like, that's just not a thing. And I understand that, like, we want it to be a thing and we strive for it or we aspire to it or whatever. But, like, every music review you've ever read that's of any interest brings in external framing, whether it's from the artist or from the writer. That this is something – it's like a platonic ideal that doesn't actually exist.
And may it not even be ideal.
Right. So
it seems like such a – it seems like that question reminds me of my Twitter mentions, which are full of Kanye stans, like availing Kanye of this cowardly posture, right? Because at this point, it's like instead of it sounding like fans are asking critics to – simmer down. Instead, it sounds like fans are hiding behind this idea that you can only think the music's bad because of politics.
Right.
You can only think negatively of Kanye because mm-hmm. of some complicating factor that has nothing to do with his craft. And I just don't like, you know, even describing the production as amazing. Like, that reminds me of that moment when Poopty Scoop came out and, like, all of the forum core Kanye fans were like, well, surely we can all agree that the Poopty Scoop beat is amazing. And I was like, this beat is trash. Like, what are you even talking
is
about?
Is it
like,
trash?
It's fine. Trash? As a song, that's the thing. The beat is basically the song that it samples, yeah. and the song yeah. sounds fine. The beat is barely a beat. It's like some weak drums over a basically unadulterated sample, but that's the framing.
But right? also, what's wrong with Bound 2?
But also,
that's not a fair.
But an interesting point about Poopty Scoop.
What's that song called? Lift yourself.
Thank you. It's called Poopty Scoop.
So, an interesting yeah. about Poopty Scoop and also about Daytona. So, this is something I think maybe Joe, you and I had spoken about at some point, but then I was surprised that Kanye sort of arrived on his own. Like, you listen to Daytona. Daytona comes first, right? And Daytona, if you look strictly at Kanye West's contribution to Daytona, from Kanye standards, like pretty unimpeachable. It's like these are good old style Kanye beats.
We got a Pusha T fan to my right.
He's
a Kanye 06 fan.
Oh god, yeah. That's also true. Yeah,
that's
sure,
fine. Sure. So and in my like I don't believe that there was like a master plan orchestrating how these things got rolled out. But I do think
certainly not. If we've learned anything, it's that there was no master plan.
But I do think it was notable that the Daytona record came first, and it was a specific version of Kanye that is not really debatable. There aren't people who are like, Kanye making soul sample chop bop beats is terrible. Like, I don't know anyone who actually holds that position.
Though there is the contingent that's like, he's just taking from Numero Group box sets or whatever. You know, his crate digging is not actually deep.
The seven people who are in the house when I was there, right. like, whose job it is to find Numero Group samples,
of course.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's always a little something arbitrary about sampling, to be honest.
Do your own digging.
Not to undermine the late 80s and most of the 90s. But like the narrative that sampling continually represents like a continuum between generations of it's like no sometimes it's just what cleared.
The Get Down
sometimes
on
it's
Netflix.
Just what they found.
The Get Down is on Netflix.
Yeah. It's just like what Large Pro found at the record store that day. Like sometimes it doesn't mean what it seems like it means. I hate to. Oh jeez.
John just came out against sampling.
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's the there
right
we
off,
are.
Right after
the gymnastics of Kanye fandom and sampling.
Right after calling it unimpeachable.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought it was notable that
classic
this version
Kanye.
Of time that right. And so if you were a type of person who was inclined to be like, well, Kanye is full of dish right now, you might be like, but
beats are banging.
But
your hooks did it.
Yeah, but then Ye came.
Can we listen to something from the Push album to get a little taste of that? Charity, what are we going to play?
Santeria. Santeria.
Good. No argument there.
Santeria. Now that the tears dry and the pain takes over, let's talk this payola, payola. You killed God's baby when it wasn't his will, and blood spill. We can't talk this over, over. The Lord is my shepherd, I am not sheep. I am just a short stone's throw from the streets. I bring my offering, I will not preach. Awaken my demons, you can hear that man screaming. I'm no different than the priest, priest. Santeria, 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 Santeria. They say that death comes in threes, how appropriate. Triple breck, the Russian like Soviets. Soviets. At the Kremlin, searching for the green like a gremlin. Presidential emblem, presidential tint on the shop that I am driven in. Woo! I just place orders and drop dollars. Rottweilers roam the grounds, the Glock hollers. The three of y'all too accessible. Seen all the wrong moves, watching the untouchables. We don't do vegetables. Get flatlined, welcome all beef, then we heat them with flat irons. Your plans are back fine. Think of double crossing the priest. Hail Mary, repeat after me. Santeria.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece, and in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at The New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day, to give you clarity and perspective, and above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
Juliana Halpert writes in from Vermont, I believe. Shouts to Julie in Vermont. But Julie says, Ye felt like the first of Kanye's albums that was designed to service a personal narrative, not the other way around. If this is a case, will it always be? Will his musical prowess and output be eclipsed by some other endeavor? And how does his career as a rapper end? Which I thought was a very gloomy question. So a quick thought. I would say, just as a sidebar, 808's... Could be something that was personal narrative first, music second, although it really was a legitimate musical progression to serve the personal narrative. I think the what's underneath this question is speed. I think when you make records fast and they're rapid response to your feelings, then yes, this is more likely to happen. And I guess I don't foresee Kanye making a slow record. No slow Kanye movement.
Really?
I don't think so.
See, I sort of think it's the only move now when you've made, again, and now we are sort of speculating on what Kanye does next, but like after you've done 5 albums in 5 weeks, all seemingly finished within like a 72-hour window from when they said they're supposed to come out, like what else do you do but spend like 3 years on an album?
You could just spend time producing R&B music. Is that what he ideally should do?
Is that what you're looking for?
The Teyana Taylor album to me is the suggest best. Is the move.
Is that the best? Is that your favorite of the five?
Yeah. Yes.
What, Reggie? What's your favorite of the five?
Can See Ghosts. Form Chords.
Wow. In your feelings. Reggie's in his feelings.
John?
It's been a rough month.
Yeah. I mean, who among us? I want a true life. I have not fully absorbed the Teyana Taylor record okay. Through no fault of Teyana Taylor's.
Sure. It came out at a weird time.
I found it hard personally to keep that same energy throughout
like 5 weeks in a row.
Yeah, throughout the month
it's the
of
best,
June.
The problem is like, it, even more than Daytona, it is the best produced album.
It sound, what I heard on Instagram, I thought sounded good. My favorite of the five. I don't know. You go first.
I don't have favorites. Right. I'm a reporter.
But
I think the highs are highest on Kids See Ghosts.
Joe?
The highs are highest on Kids See Ghosts. The most cohesive are the first and the last, the Push and the Teyana, because they're artists that...
They're standalone ideas.
They're standalone ideas, and they do a thing, and they exist largely outside of Kanye. You know, like, they both are artists without Kanye.
So is Nas, and yet.
Yeah, not, the Nas album, I think
do you not speak French?
And, oh, God.
I think we can all agree where the Nas album ranks, and it Justin's Passport is the Nas album of this table. It's seen a lot, but it doesn't necessarily bring us anything. Okay. But I think Ye is the one that I will listen to the most in the future.
I know this is going to sound, I think Ye is the best record. I know it's not the most coherent. Like, I agree the Push record's more coherent, and I agree Kid See Ghost has some moments. Like, I was actually, when I was in the studio and they were working on Kid See Ghost, like, there were two or three songs that ended up making the record that I was like holding it in. I was like, oh my God, what is happening here? This is incredible. And I don't even really, like, bang with Cudi like that. But I think this is maybe my favorite Cudi on this record.
Yeah.
Reggie, why do you like Kid See Ghost so much?
It's the high highs. I mean, from Free into Reborn, I feel like that moment. Those were two of my favorite musical moments of the year.
We should listen to Free.
Guess what?
Woo!
I feel free. Woo! Nothing hurts me anymore. Guess what, baby? I feel free. I'm so complete in the mall. Guess what, baby? I feel free. And you know damn well, he lit me up every time that I fell. It set me free. Hey! You should quit your job to this.
And it does give you sort of that glimpse of a more polished, more finished version of Kanye that we've gotten in some of the previous records.
Well, I think what's useful about Kid See Ghost is it's him working at length with a person whose job is, like, not Kanye. Like, it's like Cudi's job is to provide, like, coherence and shape, and it's him. It's to clean up the looseness, basically.
And notably, Cudi's producers are sort of seems like the co-captains on that record. You got Plain Pat and Dot the Genius.
Mm-hmm. Some Benny Blanco in there, right, who's more of a pop guy than Kanye has been working with in recent years. I'll put out my problem with Kid See Ghost, my sort of conceptual one, and you guys can tell me what you think. It irks me that for rappers to make a quote-unquote experimental album, they have to just make psych rock from the 60s.
Yes!
Shouts to Yasin.
Oh, basically, like, this idea that for them being progressive is to just do something that...
They're doing an impersonation of an idea, not an idea.
Yeah, and like, it's fine, and I get that it's subversive for Kanye to do it, and he does it really well.
Is it subversive?
And I think... But it just doesn't, like... It just feels like we're not asking enough of our musical geniuses if their genius is to just make Sgt. Pepper the rap album.
Right. Yes. You make an album in a week.
Justin, what is it?
The old line about, Kanye in the beginning being like, look, worst comes to worst, we bring in Cam to save the album. I like how Ty Dolla $ign is that now. Yes. Ty Dolla $ign is the 2010s Cameron.
Yeah.
It's great.
Someone asked who had the biggest wins from this.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good question.
That was a good question. And and I think they put their answer was
Ty.
Was Ty Dolla $ign.
And also Shake, obviously.
Yes, and Shake, who had a big couple of moments, but one in particular.
So Bennett Wissack asks, we've seen all five good albums clocking around 30 minutes. Everything's seven songs except for Tiana, which mysteriously is eight songs.
which I'll just, I said this before the podcast, I'm so mad. At the very last minute, Kanye sets the rules and then just broke his own rule. Totally. You didn't have to tell us that they were all going to be seven songs if one of them was going to be eight songs. Just combine two of the songs. I don't understand.
Also, I do think, and I think I said earlier, they said he was going to, it's been said that he's going to produce a record for Bump J and for Sly Polaroid, a 7-song album. He also told me he wanted to do a 7-song album with Caroline Shaw.
Cool.
I agree. Caroline, that'd be great.
Yeah, Valet, he could get a 7-song album.
Email anytime, but I do think a 7-song Caroline Shaw album might be a triple CD. just thinking about that. But yes, the rules are arbitrary, but they're arbitrary enough that they break. Okay, so the question is, outside of the Wyoming sessions, the Tierra Whack album, Joe Coscarelli's number one, is 15 minutes. The Freddie Gibbs album is 30 minutes. Obviously, also, we can look at X and
Lil Pump,
Valet, the SoundCloud,
you know, right. a lot of these guys making short stuff.
Is that the
stuff.
New thing? And to me, you know, we've talked a lot on Popcast about sort of what streaming has done to album lengths. And I think what you're seeing is kind of a clustering at the end. So you're going to have your Ray Schrams and your Migos and your Post Malones.
And the 33-track Chris Brown album.
God. Wasn't it longer?
It might have been 40. He thought he was Little B for a hot
second. Or O3 Greedo.
Free O3 Greedo. He thought
so. Which way is Drake going?
So I was going to say, we're going to see.
Should we place bets? Okay, let's all write down the number of songs we think are going to be on Scorpion. Don't show anybody. Just write down.
You know
down.
That album is coming out on my birthday?
That is the worst
birthday present I have ever received.
I thought
my
you loved
entire
Drake.
Life is a Drake. Ooh.
All right, so everybody's going to write down how many songs they think are going to be on Scorpion.
Calabasas yeah. in my past.
Wait, including bonus tracks? Like if Hotline Bling, does that count on views or does that not count?
I think it doesn't count.
But even if it's on the track list?
No, I think we got to do like new, like not like nice
if
for
it's
what
tacked
counts.
On at the end. It
no,
doesn't
no, 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 tacked on the end, but like nice for what counts because I'm sure.
Well,
nice
but what if nice for what ends up a bonus track?
What if nice for what's not even on the album?
Who knows?
Okay, fine. With it doesn't matter. With bonus tracks.
Okay. Total
iTunes,
tracks.
iTunes.
When you click on the thing.
Yes. How many? Tracks? All right. Everybody, write it down.
I just want to know, I don't have a pen. I feel like Chris Tucker in Rush Hour 2 in the casino yelling about $5,000 chips
okay.
with no pen.
Write it down.
If someone wrote down 7, I'm going to be mad.
All right, then we all have to reveal our numbers at the same time.
Okay,
everybody turn your paper around.
All right, we got a 15, we got a 14. Reggie comes in with a 22. Oh!
wait,
and I said 17.
17.
Are we playing Price is Right rules? If you're over, you're out.
Yeah.
Okay. Reggie went high.
The thing is, I think Reggie. I mean, the problem with if there is somebody who I believe scrapped an earlier version of an album, it's Drake.
That yes.
you know.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
But I want Drake's gonna have like the Scorpion sessions. Yeah.
I want to come back to the 7 songs thing because I think it. You know, I think it was an interesting move. I think in this streaming era, we had gone towards maximalism.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kanye and Good Music are sort of rethinking what it means. Maybe you get more streams off of short projects than you do off of long projects. It's a good theory. But I also think it gets at the fact that technology and form, I think, dictated a lot of how this played out.
Yeah.
I think, like, it's been undercounted how much these are albums of the streaming era, mm-hmm. not just in the how long they are, but in the delivery mechanism. Like it just 5 years ago, it just wasn't possible to finish an album, play it at a party, and then have it on Spotify the next day. Like these albums are like a reaction to the technology that is now available,
yep.
and especially available to A-list artists, where these streaming services will bend over backwards, and the labels, same thing. They'll bend over backwards to have a new Kanye album, to have a new Jay-Z album, to have a new Drake album.
Did Jay-Z put a record out recently?
I think so. I heard that he might have, but I'm not sure. But I just this idea that basically you can finish and deliver it at the same time was unheard of even back to Yeezus. Like Yeezus, they made CDs. As far as I know, none of these Kanye projects exist.
They are selling. They're selling vinyl.
Right, but when will they be delivered?
No, of course they'll come out.
It's going to be
like
vinyl.
It's going to be like when my Frank Ocean CD showed up in the mail like 9 months later.
So I think that when you compared Ye to like mid-2000s mixtapes, that's accurate. Also in the sense that the immediacy of the delivery.
That's what it is.
The songs sound like that because he could just turn around and finish them, and mm-hmm. he didn't sit with these songs. He didn't think like, I made this a week ago. Does it still sound good?
To that point, there's actually a good question that's not on these 5 albums, but actually kind of touches on what you were talking about and what we've been talking about. This is from Stephen, I'm going to say Tenosha. Stephen, I'm assuming the Y in the middle of your name is silent. So Stephen Tenosha. Bomani Jones said something. Hey, Bomani. Shouts to Bomani. Said something interesting during his podcast about how Yeezus would be better received if it came out now during this weird time that we're at. Would you agree with his assessment? And then the bonus content of this question is hot take, but Kanye only has two classics, Yeezus and 808s.
Which is amazing.
That's great. It's a fire take. He has a .edu email address, so I think that's like an age-appropriate take. That's not right.
But yeah, it's not right. I mean,
but well, I appreciate it. But
well,
I admire
it. Is, though.
I admire
college,
it.
Is, college,
because well, 808s college is a classic. 808s is a classic is in that classic. It is the most overrated piece of recorded music in American history. And so that is a classic.
This is why we have you. This is why we have you.
Know? But all the things that people say know, are I'm wrong kidding, with. But yeah. No, but all the things that people say are wrong with Ye. Are also wrong with 808.
Yes. Yeah.
They're also
yeah,
wrong with 808.
Totally.
So and all these people
like,
on their high horse.
Put it out there.
But that's fine. But all these people on their high horse who were like, 808 is one of the most meaningful albums that has ever been informed my emotional well-being. They're like, yay, it's trash. It's like, actually, no. That's actually false.
You have to like both or neither, like yeah, Justin Cherry.
That's true. Yeah.
There's not the musical progression on Ye that there was in 808.
That's true.
No, yes.
It didn't create a genre.
Sorry.
You see, yeah.
It didn't create Drake. Yeah.
It might create 070 Woo! Shake Core.
Sure.
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 But my ultimate reaction to Ye is sure.
About Yeezus, yes. I don't know that Yeezus needs to be better received. I think it was received perfectly in that well. Most people liked it at the time, and now more people like it.
I actually feel like there was a lot more negative energy around
there was
Yeezus
a lot of pushback for Yeezus.
Really? A lot of negative energy, yeah.
I can't remember.
I really feel like there was a lot of negative energy.
I remember loving it,
but I remember even like when my Yeezus interview dropped, there was bad. There were negative. There was just like, this is not.
But it was the
a
same.
Thing.
It was the same for 808s too. And I think that's the link between the two is that those were the ones that were the sharpest left turns.
Absolutely.
And so people were not necessarily on board.
I know we're not going to rank Kanye albums, but Yeezus is the best Kanye album.
I actually am close to agreeing with you on that. I mean, 808s is a bunch of humming not, underwater. I'm sorry. I don't care.
It's not the best Kanye
great,
album.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
It's not.
Great.
But no, we're not going to rank Kanye albums. Well, only one of us has worked for Complex.
Shouts out. Shouts out to Damian Scott.
Yeah, shout seriously. D. Scott.
Godfather.
Young King.
I was with Complex for a little bit.
Were you? Reggie? Are there any other secrets that you have? Are you going to take
I'll
the podcast?
Never tell.
My God. I did not know. Wow.
John, I want to ask you
a
question.
Oh, my God. I worked at Complex.
You just
I was the music editor of issues 1 and 2 of Complex Magazine.
You just remember it.
I did.
You had suppressed that memory.
I did. Yo, literally issues, if you find the first two print issues of Complex, all the music coverage was done by me.
You were on it.
That's
true. Burn it.
That's true. They had to just cleanse the memory. Okay, well, there is one question on that. Yes.
Abdul Jama asks, was Kanye comfortable or tense when describing his intervention with Tony Robbins?
A great, concise question.
Right. And that's the intro to your piece. Yes. But also, there are parts in your story where you describe Kanye being more zen, to use a shorthand, than in previous times you'd been around him. Yeah. And that's a little bit hard to square with how
quotes.
We've seen him in public
and also
the quotes.
Yeah,
in the piece.
Okay. So just so,
so just
two
like
quick,
his being.
Okay. So two quick detours before we get to that question. One, to Abdul's question, I would say he was comfortable. He volunteered it. I obviously had no way of knowing
that Tony Robbins had come to his
home. Yeah, I had no. Although I guess there was a Daily Mail story about him going to the seminar with Chloe and Kendall and Kim. So I guess that was known in the world. I did not know it, but it was known in the world. But he volunteered it. So I would say he was mostly comfortable. Kanye kind of operates at a perennial comfort level. Like he's not, there are ways to make Kanye uncomfortable. Asking him about his mother is you're going to get him here. He's going to shut down immediately. I asked him to sort of talk more about the period leading up to his hospitalization. And that did not go well. You know, you read a finished piece and you sort of assume everything went well. But like there are plenty of moments during the 2 days that I was talking to him that did not go well. But this was something that he volunteered, just kind of like out of nowhere. So I'd say he was comfortable. So I would say the number one struggle of not writing this piece, but delivering this piece, like as a sort of finished body of work, was we have all been trained to read Kanye on the page as like ah, like the moment in the piece where he's talking about the difference between the Charlemagne and the TMZ interview. And the Charlemagne is when the casket door closes, the casket lid closes. The TMZ interview is when he like opens up at the funeral and is like, ah, I'm here. We have been trained, I think, over the years to read all Kanye quotes that way, not the other way. And so it's a real challenge. And this is something that came up in edits where there are things in the piece that sound they read flat unhinged. But in my experience of him communicating and my experience of talking to him on and off for 10 years, I know that they are more hinged than they seem, even if they maybe are not more hinged than like something Drake would say, you know?
I love that that's the baseline.
Well, I just, when I was thinking of like who.
Drake insights, like, I like my bed.
That's another part.
Next week.
So that was a real challenge. And like, to be honest, I don't know if I 100% nailed that challenge. It's a very hard thing to do when someone says kind of things that can be read as wild in a very calm way and in almost like a unremarkable way. That's a very challenging thing as a journalist to try to render without prejudice, basically. So that's a way of getting to the question, which is what was his mood and what was engaging with him like? I think it's important to remember what the context was. Number one, Wyoming, where he's been on and off for a year to seek a certain kind of peace. He told me he went there initially not long after he got out of the hospital. This is part of a healing tactic on his part. Number two, Ye had literally just come out. And it wasn't like Kids See Ghosts or the Nas record or the Tiana record where they're still finishing it the day after. Whatever was done with Ye, they were making two or three small tweaks, but it was basically done. So it's like the day after I filed the first draft of this piece where I was just like, I'm walking around, I'm having a great time, you know? So for Ye, I think he was in his most lucid. And I think he also knew that this time period was coming to a close. I don't think he said he wants to get a place in Wyoming. He said he wants to spend more time there. He told me at one point he wants to make 52 records in 52 weeks. Take that for what you will. But I think he was sensing there was a little bit of a nostalgia thing happening, a zen for having put out this body of work after sort of building up to it after a very traumatic year and a half. When we were all walking through the center of Jackson and just these kids were running up on him, I was struck because anytime you've been around Kanye, certainly in New York, you can't have kids. Not that kids don't, but like he would not tolerate that. He would jump in a truck or he would just go back into the whatever building he was from that he had come out of. But the idea that he was just like, no, I want to walk. And like every kid comes up like, I'm just going to talk to these kids. That's just not a Kanye that I think that I've spent a lot of time with. And the people who know Kanye, who I know, don't think that they've spent a lot of time with that Kanye. So I thought that was real. And I think one of the challenges of this piece was basically convincing people of that, like writing it in a way where that came through in the piece that didn't seem overbearing.
And obviously you're not his doctor, but, you know, you do have a quote in there where he says that he's not taking his medication and like,
one pill in 7 days.
One pill in 7 days is what he said. And, you know, there were some people on Twitter yesterday who I saw like
also telling the New York Times commenters.
Right.
Shouts to every New York Times commenter.
Which I think is a valid point, which is like to everyone out there, like it's not a sign of weakness to need to take medication.
Of course
like
not.
It's, you know, it's not something to brag about that you're not taking the medication that's prescribed.
But also
to you,
everybody is medicated very differently.
Sure. Like, and it's a personal journey, obviously. But I wonder what you took away from being around him with regards to his mental health and how he is either dealing with it or not dealing with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally pretty loath to speculate on mental health, but since Kanye himself speaks about it, I feel we can talk about it a little bit. If you look at the Kanye immediately post-hospital, you know, the Trump visit, the Trump Tower visit, like those initial public like photos, the early paparazzi photos of him, I think we can all more or less agree that he doesn't look particularly well in any of those. Like there's a glassiness, there's a slowness, he just doesn't look that well. And of course, my sense is he was pretty heavily medicated at that time. And I think like a lot of people who are in the process of taking meds for various psychological issues, it is a moving target. And I think he's trying to figure out what the right dosage is for him. You know, I'm assuming he told me the truth. Like for all I know, he wasn't telling me. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he did take a pill every day I saw him. I don't know. It's tough to say, but He was even. He was lucid. There was a point in the piece where he's like, you look in my eyes, you see no sunken place. Like, I've been around Kanye at various levels of emotional intensity and vibrancy. This was a very different Ye. It was a slightly more subdued, calm, genuinely looking at trees and being like, I want to be a tree. Like, you know, it's like a little bit like, what? But but also for a guy who used to be like, I want to be Steve Jobs.
Right.
And I think he still does.
Sure.
But I think he understands the ecosystem.
Yeah, and you compared it directly to the Yeezus era because your Q&A with Kanye from the Yeezus era was like, that was like right around the Sway interview, around like the Zayn Lowe stuff and Tim Westwood when he was just really screaming at everyone. And he
constantly.
Did he scream at all when you were around
him? Not one time. Well, no, actually, he didn't scream, but there was one time, I don't think this made the piece, but there's a guy who is an old Chicago guy who actually is the person who taught Kanye to perform. And he's now sort of one of the people in Wyoming kind of like hanging out. His name's Greg. And Greg is part of a duo called Abstract Mind State. And Ye is producing a record for them. And he had asked Greg to do something. Yes. I see what you're doing, Joe.
We're all waiting for that to drop. no shots at the group. No. Kanye is producing a lot of people's albums that never come out.
52 albums in 52. I mean, hey, I'd be into that. 52 sure. albums for 2 weeks.
I would not. I would like to register my dissent.
But there was a point where he had asked Greg overnight, I think from Friday into, I was with them Friday and Saturday. I think from Friday into Saturday, had asked Greg to like make some changes to the files. And then he listened to the files and he hadn't made the changes or he made different changes or something. And Ye kind of like started washing him, basically. But it wasn't the same kind of like, I'm Steve Jobs. Like, sure. It wasn't, you know. But there were elements where he was just like, you know, basically everything that I've done in the last, you know, 3 months or 4 months, I'm carrying. Like, I'm carrying that urgency. He's like, what are you doing? You're not like, I asked you to make like this one change. You can't even do the one change.
He was asking him to keep that same energy, would you say?
He was, to import it. But that was probably the most heated. But it wasn't even the same kind. Like, it's just categorically not the Yeezus era. And also, like, the previous, like, 07 Ye, it's like, it's not the same thing. Because, look, he's a father. He's middle-aged. Like, look, I'm the oldest person at this table. I'm like well on my way to being washed. Shouts to Zach. You know, like that's a certain thing happens. Like your priorities shift. And I think for Ye, and I think you saw this at the Louis Vuitton show when Virgil walked down and they gave that really meaningful, long, tearful hug to each other. I think Ye understands that like in as much as he's going to influence the world, like his kids are going to influence the world, both literal and figurative. And so I do think that some of that like rawness that like I'm planting this flag, some of that's gone.
As much as I don't deny that, you know, he's older now and he's gone through these personal transformations. Yesterday on Twitter, you put the 4 interviews that you've done with Kanye. And I read the first one, which I don't know that I'd read.
Seven?
Yeah. That I don't know if I read since Graduation was about to come out. And I was struck by how much it echoes the exact arc that we just went on with Ye, even down to some of the same quotes that you included that mirror one another. And this was Kanye, in 2007. And the controversy he was responding to was jumping on stage, not the time you're
not
thinking.
Taylor.
Not Taylor, the time before that when he was mad that his Pamela Anderson Touch the Sky video did not beat Justice at the MTV Europe Awards.
Yeah, Justice was hot then, though. It was a different time.
And this was Justice. This was Justin versus Simeon. Awesome. Yeah. This was even before the Cross album. So this was like,
oh, wow. Wait,
this was We Are Your
but
Friends.
That was a hot video, if I remember correctly. The Justice video.
Should we listen to a little bit of We Are Your Friends?
Sure.
Sure. Justice versus Simeon, then I'll finish this point.
Yeah. We'll
So that was Justice versus Simeon. Do you remember this? Is this taking everyone back?
Oh, yeah.
So that was Kanye's controversy of the moment. And basically, in the run-up to graduation, he was having to apologize for being so extra, for jumping on stage and for starting these fights. And then you have quotes from people like Jay being like, I think Kanye is really growing up. I think he's really learned to, he's really learned that he doesn't have to say this all the time. And then you have a quote from him in there where he says, you know, artists should be like children,
yeah,
which is the same thing he says about voting and the same thing he says about being an
artist. And there's also like
a
thing in the Yeezus thing as well.
Where
like
it's almost the same.
There's a question that someone emailed about the relationship between Ye and childhood.
Right. So the point I want to make on this is that while this was the last straw for many people with Kanye, this Trump stuff, this TMZ stuff, the slavery stuff, it's really the pattern is the same. If you've been following his
there's
career,
a lot of last straws.
There's always last shots. It's always does something, goes too far, apologizes, repents to various degrees, and then makes an album about it. Now, I think there's something about this moment where he had to go way further to offend people because so much has changed in the world in the last decade, and he had to really say that slavery sounded like a choice to like sort of register on the same way that before all he did was tell Justice that he had a better music video than them. And it's just like,
But that's why it's hard for me to buy into the idea of Kanye arcs because or like a Yeezus era versus a Ye era, because it's he, if anything, as much as we talk about Kanye in terms of these grand narratives, he more than any other artist just strikes me as flat. Like, he just seems like the same guy since College Dropout. Like, the only thing that's really changed
scale.
It's the dynamic, and it's the fact that, it's the provocations by sort of to scale with his celebrity, the provocations have to become louder.
Right.
But he's always.
But the inconsistency is the consistency. And that's which is what I said in the piece. It's like, that's every time you always go through this narrative, it's like, well, Ye's really. Wow.
He's really gone this time.
Yeah. And it is always that.
But it's the thing that's striking to me is the idea that it took Kanye getting down with Trump for adults who like Kanye to arrive at the idea that like, maybe modeling your life like off of being a permanent 3-year-old is not a thing to admire and not a good way to be. Like, that's the thing about Kanye fandom that strikes me as noxious and irritating and juvenile.
Just I have one thing to say to you.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah. Oh, I'm little baby.
I guess we don't have to go into this, but were people really modeling their lives after
they're
him?
Not, but they were looking.
I modeled my closet after
him. No. But I'm saying that people definitely, like, in so much as spirit animaling is a thing that people do. And people, I do think, like, I do think that to an extent, people looked for a long time to Kanye as a source of, like, aphorisms and daily affirmations.
That's no different than people with Beyonce or people.
Sure,
with
but the difference is that Beyonce's, like, extreme, like, Beyonce is ended
extremely
up in a very
functional.
Yeah, it's a basically functional person in a way that, like, Kanye is not just, he's not a good platonic model, and it's just weird that it took him endorsing Trump for people to be like, yeah, this guy's not a good platonic model for how I should, like, think about how to be a decent, an intelligent, and, like, bold, dynamic person.
I don't think it's about modeling after him so much as being able to identify with him. And I think that the thing that has changed is so much of his career has been about struggle. It's been about wrestling against the machine, whether it's fashion, whether it's getting into the music business. And that's an easy thing to identify with, to project yourself onto. And so I think that was a big part of his success was that people being able to look at him and see themselves. And so when he comes and makes this pivot to politics, obviously that's going to upset that model, and that's what people are.
Oh, there's a guy who wrote a book called My Struggle, and people should look him up. I just don't think that struggle is like a basic baseline thing is enough to, like, I get what you're saying, but it just seems so.
But also
it depends on where it's directed.
But this is the punchline, is that Kanye is still positing himself like that. He just chose a unfortunate struggle to align himself with.
Well, and I would say even in Yeezus, I remember him losing people when the struggle became fashion. Like, I can do do some fashion, but I can't do all the fashion that I want. And the other, I feel like people forget this, the other thing he was obsessed with in those interviews was the paparazzi. And he was like, I am basically a slave to the paparazzi. I don't know if he used that phrase specifically, but he invoked civil rights, mm-hmm. with reference to the paparazzi.
And that
was another time where people were like, we just can't go there with you. I'm sorry, pal.
Exactly. That's
but just
point.
An interesting, and I don't want to dwell too much on the TMZ stuff, because like I allowed him. He said what he needed to say that's in the piece. You know, take it for what it is. But, you know, a thing that he said that I thought was striking that I used, which is like when he says slave, I didn't take it in that context, which is like, of course, a baffling thing to say. But he also brought up something that I thought was right. He said, and I didn't use this in the piece, but he said he was talking about the choice of going to TMZ and why talking about that on TMZ. And he's like, I should have known that no matter what I said at TMZ, it was going to go all crazy. Because at TMZ, words turn to punches. And I think it's interesting, and I was trying to imagine a world where he had either floated what he said at TMZ in the Charlamagne interview or floated it like in that random big boy Q&A after the Wyoming thing came out. I wonder how much of it was going into that place with Candace Owens side by side. Like, I wonder, did Candace Owens say that to him, you know, in the car ride over, and then he just picked up on it?
Yeah, it's an inflammatory environment. It's like, right. It's built and on I getting wonder, people to say things that
because I'm sure if I Googled Kanye West slave, like, you know, he has songs where it's in the title, you know, I wonder if I Googled Kanye West slave, like, would he have said similarly inflammatory things in other contexts that did not rile people up in the same way?
He had also primed the pump a little bit in the weeks before.
Of course.
You know, he
was
like ready to say something that people would be able to latch
onto.
It's
almost like he can't just blame the nature of TMZ and that he himself authored these statements and that he can't retreat behind the fiction that he is three.
Who among us?
Who among us?
Who can relate? But with that in mind and keeping in mind how some of the things that Kanye has been doing over the last couple months have been damaging to his fans and to people who took him seriously, whether or not Justin Charity thinks that that was an appropriate life choice ever. Here's a question. This is from David Nam. David says, in your conversations, to what extent would you say Kanye empathizes with or has ventured to consider those people and fans in the general public he genuinely hurt through his actions? The question goes on longer, but I think that's the thrust of the question. I don't find me a period of Kanye where empathy has been central.
He doesn't care about anybody.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I haven't spoken to Kanye, but celebrities don't care about you, period.
Yeah, they don't care. Like, they don't care about me. I mean, I sat there for, I don't think he doesn't care about me necessarily. You know, like, doesn't care about, I think he said things to the fact that he understands that people who like him have found problems and that he understands why they would hear Trump and not hear what he, like, whatever the dog whistle that he's hearing. He understands that why people who generally like Kanye don't hear that same thing. But I would say that's about the extent from an empathy perspective. I wouldn't say, and I think what Joe says is right. The only celebrity who cares about you is Drake.
No, but honestly, Kanye's kind of the bubble that Kanye exists in the second half of his career, I think is really hard for anyone to fathom that isn't, you know, a famous millionaire or I've at least spent some face time with famous millionaires. Like, I don't think he sees humans that listen to his music in the way that he might have, you know, pre 2010. It's just, and it would be, I don't think he's especially equipped for it, but it would be asking a lot of anyone to sort of be able to empathize on a one-to-one level with people, no matter how much your music has meant to them. I don't know. Charity?
No, I just want to say Justin has one arm on the table.
News anchor stature.
Or crossfire style.
No, I mean, I think that's right. I think that is the wild thing of like,
we care about them more than they care about us.
Right.
Like, period.
Totally.
And damn, son.
But that is the weird dynamic of watching people sort of
love no celebs.
Have a very hot relationship with Kanye. Kanye, go Trump. And then people have a very cold relationship with Kanye. And it's like, both of those polls don't really make it. Like, he's just removed, like, everything he believes about Trump, everything that all these other celebrities, like David Lynch, who give, like, these sort of quotes about Trump, like, they're coming from a rarefied place that has nothing to do with serious thought or politics. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, it's just like, I never really expected Kanye West to be a serious, empathetic person. And in fact, I think his career is littered with clues that he just is not equipped to be that person.
And I think this kind of goes back to sort of what we were talking about right at the beginning of the podcast, which is I'm consistently struck in my Twitter mentions by people's need for Kanye in this case, or in other cases, other celebrities, to fill a kind of moral vacuum or intellectual vacuum or emotional vacuum.
Why would
vacuum.
You look to Los Angeles to fill the moral vacuum of a man? Like, that is the most bonkers critical consensus to me, is the idea that people are like, yeah, everyone who lives and works as a performer in Los Angeles, California, needs to step up and use their platforms to reconstruct the moral compass of the United States. Give me a break.
And look, I understand, but if you're Give six, I understand how break. If you're 16,
if
that's
you're
really
16,
attractive.
But that is not who no, we're talking about. We're talking about 30-year-olds.
Yeah, and
I write for websites.
Right, and I'm grateful that one of my first mentors, Reggie Dennis, was basically like, have no heroes. Like, he was very clear about that from day one. And I didn't understand because I was still young enough to have heroes, but I washed myself with that pretty
I
fast.
I will say that, you know, for all the sort of jaded pessimism that we're espousing over the last 5 minutes, like, if you can find those things in the art, that's okay. Like, that's what the music is for. You know what I mean? Like, the music is for you to find the empathy that you're looking for. It might not be for you specifically, but if you can see in the art what it is you're searching for in these figures, that's the place to get it, not from their public personas.
Or not from them literally
physically. Joe, were you in Kanye's living room telling him offering screen therapy?
I'm just saying that all this can be BS, but
the
music can still be
meaningful.
Should
we all scream? Are we comfortable to scream in our
room
studio?
Do we need to do a primal scream?
Oh, my God.
But the music is so happy.
We up in the Coco Cabana. Go bitch, you know I've been better. My hubby, is so handsome. I'll dem ransom. And then some. I got a man, but ain't got no manners. I got a man, but ain't got no manners. I got a man, but ain't got no manners, yeah. Up in the Coco Cabana, go bitch, you know I've been better. My hubby's so handsome. I'll dem ransom.
Okay, so that was No Manners from the Tiana record, which I look forward to absorbing
someday.
Tiana Taylor's last record was great.
Right.
Well, it's not a knock on Tiana
Taylor.
Wait till
it's finished, because Tiana Taylor was on the radio today.
No,
yeah,
but
that's what I'm talking.
It.
Tiana Taylor was on the radio today saying the version that got uploaded was not the version she expected to be uploaded and that it will be re-uploaded this week.
She was told by AppleCare. Good music is like the worst AppleCare you've ever heard.
Just as a quick sidebar, that's a tease for everyone except me. Ryan Sartor emailed me about an uploading issue that I don't even want to say because it's so hot that I want to investigate it, and I'm going to get back to him. But Ryan, I want you to know I got your email.
Wow.
And we're looking into it. We're on it. Okay, lightning round. A lot of short questions, so I appreciate that. Nick Adams wants to know, has Kanye rapped a good guest verse in the 2010s?
Whew. I can't think of one.
We actually talked about this before we started recording.
And I still can't think of one.
Wait, but I misinterpreted the question before recording. I thought he's like, has he rapped a good verse in the 2010s? I don't know. I struggled.
You're scratching your head there for a
second. And your answer was 30 hours.
Yeah.
Can someone pull
which may or may not have been written by Drake. your favorite rapper.
Can someone pull up
good writer.
The Kanye singles wiki page? Yeah.
While you do that, just in the same spirit that I think Kanye should be sentenced to only producing R&B music, I think Drake should be sentenced to only writing for Kanye West and not forcing me to listen
Save
to
it
any,
for the Drake pop.
Any Drake music. I would love that. We would love to see that, Jackie. Oh we would love to see. Like, imagine bragging about having written Father Stretch My Hands Part 1. I'm a fan. I'm upset.
You're upset.
I'm upset.
So in the 2010s, Kanye's guest verses include I'm about to read some songs that you guys have not heard in many years.
Speak on it.
Mr. Hudson's Anyone But Him. Glenwood by Big Sean. Blazin' by Nicki Minaj. Does anyone remember these songs? Sailing Not Selling by Jhené Aiko, apparently featured a verse by Kanye.
What? Was that leftover from the Dilated People?
Wow. These songs are made in a parallel universe.
That's not a real. These are played in Zoomies. These are.
I'm trying to get to some good ones. Sanctified, great song.
Overrated song.
Great song.
And I am the raw stan.
Great song. I don't remember overrated. Kanye's verse on it, but I think it's good. Can we
wow, play? Is the song
just
so
play?
Good that you
all right,
don't
we're just
gonna
play. We're just gonna play Kanye's verse on Sanctified,
the
which
9 minute Rick
Ross, which may or may not be.
And you guys email us back and tell if it's good or bad.
It is a podcast.
I kind of doubt that it's gonna be good. This is a good question because he does not do great guest verses in general. Guilty fornicating from my status. All I wanted was $100 million and a bed. Plus that paper chasing it, it turned me to a savage. Groupies in the lobby, they just trying to get established. God, I've been guilty fornicating from my status. We be loving the oh yeah, they say in the new year that day that he spazzing. But when Ollie turn up and be Ollie, you can't never take that but take back your cashes. Till you could go on and make up lies. But I'm so sanctified, I don't sweat it. Wipe my forehead with a handkerchief and wash my sins in the blood of Jesus. People saying, yeah, we need another Jesus. Lames try to tell me, cut the wildin' out. But who the fuck is you reaching? Pass me 30 bottles, champagne procession. That's that holy water, sanctified refreshers. God sent me a message, said I'm too aggressive. Really? Good Kanye guest verse. Theophilus London, Can't Stop, 2014.
Oh, okay. I mean, fair. Shouts to Theo, who I saw in Wyoming. What's up, Theo?
Theo was there.
Theo, heavy.
All right.
Heavy.
So you got your answer there. Next question.
Was the rush of albums done to meet a deadline or end a deal that good music had with Def Jam?
Great question. Great question. We got to get Gabe on the phone.
Yeah,
we'll be
GT,
back.
GT, send us a text. It's a fair question. I don't think so. There didn't appear to be any label-oriented confusions or tensions. Everybody seems like aligned and in the same. So I didn't get that sense.
We don't know of any tension between good music and Def Jam.
No, and also, but, like, there are good music, like, you know, Stephen Victor, who was a good music, is now a Def Jam employee. Like, there's a lot of interweaving.
Yep.
So Emily Testcats wants to know, did he actually think Kim was going to leave him post-TMZ, and why would that be the nail in the coffin? I don't know. I think that is more symbolic of his awareness that he had crossed some kind of threshold. And I do firmly believe that Kim called him and was basically like, mother, like, what are you doing? Like, I really, like, at some other point in the interview, I don't think I use this, but I was like, when did you know that the experiment had gone wrong or whatever? And he was like, when my wife was about to have a heart attack. So, like, yeah, I think that's
fair. Was definitely a stressor.
Wait, while we're on that, though, can we talk about the cancel, like, his obsession with cancel culture?
Yeah,
because that's not a real thing.
Wait,
why is he obsessed with that?
Are you not on? Did you delete your Twitter account?
No. I the thing I don't get.
Are you can't? Are it maybe because it's your canceled and
you just didn't even know? Yeah, you're Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense.
But I mean, Kanye himself, right? Like, it's weird how he himself can embody the idea that, like, that the power of canceling is totally overstated, and he takes it so seriously despite himself, like, defying the idea that Twitter cancels people. Like, that's not a real thing. It's a rhetorical posture that one adopts online.
As you and texted me earlier today,
what we should prescribe for Kanye is to listen to our podcast about Justin Timberlake and cancel culture.
Right, because that was like Timberlake was a great example.
A top ten podcast.
People like the Timberlake rollout started. People didn't like certain aesthetic cues, and they're like, "We're canceling Timberlake." But like Timberlake was due to like the level of success he has with the Stapleton song is about where he should be in the culture right now. Like, it's a rhetorical posture.
I don't know.
Give me an example of somebody that Twitter has canceled that was like in this sort of
and
context.
That Twitter has canceled, not someone like Harvey Weinstein and Louis C.K.
who actually committed.
Yeah, I'm talking about the idea that allegedly some Twitter consensus emerges and actually like that's describing it as a culture just seems really. I think that was maybe just like a slight rhetorical thing.
I don't know if it was a shorthand. Yeah,
I don't know if it was
a shorthand for what?
For doing something that your core audience believes puts you on outside of their box, basically.
Sure, but what is the consequence that he's afraid of exactly?
Well, and I think it like he would say like his lack of commercial success over the last two albums in the mainstream.
Oh, so he's just looking for another excuse for the fact for that his that like music
none of his
is
songs
getting
get
worse.
Played on the radio. Right. Yeah. And you're just saying it's because the music is getting worse. Sure. I don't know.
I actually don't think those two things are related. I also feel like I want to acknowledge whoever the person who emailed in and wanted to know if Kanye felt upset that like J. Cole's KOD
outsold.
Yeah,
Born Sinner outsold Yeezus. Like he keeps taking the L. he keeps taking the L from J. Cole.
J. Cole to Kanye, hold this.
Can we end on a question, or can
yeah,
we do
just one
more
note on the cancel thing?
Like, I have a favorite question.
Okay, good.
That we didn't get to.
So. You have to understand that Kanye is operating the same way he's operating with politics at 35,000 feet. Like, he's operating from Twitter at 35,000 feet just because he's, like, posting a lot on Twitter. He's not necessarily reading a lot on Twitter. And so I think even when I saw him talk to Virgil and say, like, I'm not canceled out the culture, like, people are listening, like, I think he understands it as a more binary thing. I understand you're saying it's basically posture, and I know it's posture. And, like, I certainly have, like, spent enough time looking at Twitter to understand the kind of rhetorical gambit of canceling. But I do think that he understands it as, like, a little bit more of, like, I'm on today, I'm off tomorrow, and or that could happen. Now, I'm not saying it's right, but I do think that that is the framework he's operating from. Again, I don't co-sign it. But I
just why? Didn't. But why is yeah? It, that just sounds like the mindset of an extremely online person, and I man, that's a pretty sad state to be in. To be, you know what I mean? Like making albums in that tight of a way and still be, you're making albums. You're making like a bunch of different albums under a tight deadline, and yet you're obsessed with this. Like you're distracted by Twitter.
Like, aren't we all?
Yeah.
It's like, again,
like,
who
do you remember when rappers at least pretended to be too cool for blogs and social media? And Kanye is just like the bizarro inverse of that, where he cannot seem any more extremely online in just the most pathetic way. Well, I can't.
Yeah, but when other rappers make memes, you think it's cool.
I don't think it's cool when Drake makes memes. Are you kidding me?
All right, I've got one more question wanted to hit on because I think it's telling. Scott Guild asks, Kanye ends Ye with a voice note from Nicki and the 5-album project with Tiana. With these releases, how has the role of women changed in the thematic universe of his music?
Not at all.
Yeah, I want to say that if anything was clear from the Ye party, and I wasn't there, but it's that Kanye doesn't have a lot of female friends. And when the Kardashians don't show up for him, there wasn't a strong female presence as far as I could tell. I don't know if you had a different experience at the event, but also in his brain trust. I think, you know, he's obviously collaborated with women. Like he had this very close relationship with Vanessa Beecroft, for better or worse. I think artist wise, fashion wise, there are women that he loves, but as far as the Kanye West brain trust goes, and I think the things that you mention are both sort of afterthoughts, the Nicki voicemail and the Tiana album, you know, no shots. But again, I don't think those are necessarily.
I don't think the Tiana album is afterthought to him. It's the best crafted of the album.
He was in Paris the day it was due.
I know, but
didn't
I'm
care
just,
enough to cut off that extra eighth song.
I just think.
Okay, well, I think there's a more complicated answer to
sure,
that.
Sure, there is.
Because I think his music brain trust is different from, say, his fashion and like other brain trusts. I do think the most significant figure in his life is Kim. I don't think when it comes to music making, there's a lot of female energy
in the Kanye space. I've known one or two women over the years who have been adjacent or proximate to his music making, but mostly all the spaces I've ever been in with him where he's making music are male spaces. But in fashion, Kim Schraub or Schaub, who is sort of like his main head of apparel or whatever, that's a woman. His main designers for Yeezy are female. So it's not that it's not there. And as far as the family, I mean, yes, they were not at the Wyoming event. And I believe that this was not pleasing to him. I witnessed a call between him and Chloe where it came up. You know, it certainly was on his mind. But I think this question felt specific to music making. Sure. And I do agree that, like, it remains a male preserve.
And also the role of women in his thematic universe, as the question formulated it. I think that, you know, you do see Kanye the father, Kanye the husband more in these last two albums. I feel like, if anything, Pablo was his, like, I'm adjusting to family life album. Sure. That's what I remember taking away from it most immediately. And in the way he addresses it on these albums, like on Violent Crimes, for instance, is a bit more slapdash in keeping with the rest of the subjects he's tackling on this album. But I do think you do get more of Kanye thinking about himself in relation to the women in his life.
Okay, Joe. So to go out, let's listen to Violent Crimes, which is a Kanye record about women where he is growing up.
Allegedly.
Thank you, Justin.
Don't you grow up in a hurry, your mama be worried, oh, it was all part of the story.
That's our show. Thank you to everyone who emailed questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to every question and to every person, but we will do more of these later in the year. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us more questions or more feelings about Kanye or more political positions that I should have asked him about at podcast@nytimes.com. And subscribe to the podcast because it's a great emotional choice for your life at Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, I think, anywhere audio content is subscribed to. Thank you to my guests, Justin, Reggie, and Joe. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We're back next week.
I hope she like Nicki, I make her a monster. Now having menages, I'm just being silly. I answer the door like Will Smith and Martin. Do we have a problem? Matter of fact, Marlon. This ain't me, the Farkas. I beat his zero. Pray I beat the charges. No, daddy don't play. Not when it comes to their daughters. Don't do no yoga. Don't do Pilates. Just play piano and stick to karate. I pray your body.